You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the bonds shared between people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 298 of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week are the always fabulous and, may I say, fashionable Scott Wright and Kevin Johnson.
I find it funny that you say that because earlier today I came into the office and one of the people here commented that I looked nice today.
See? I and told you.
The implication was because I wasn't wearing a branded shirt somehow, you know, I'm dressed like a normal human. So I came up with an idea, and I just want to throw it out there to get feedback. I did tweet it. I did post it on LinkedIn. So, you know, for those wondering, this is not exclusive. Here's my thought. How many times have you been to an event and been taken to some crappy vendor dinner at Ruth Chris or Morton's? Or, like, yes. I was at an event. This was a few years ago, but I was at an event, and I was going with the group. Right. It was an IONS event, and at IONS events, the faculty would go to the vendor dinners as like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
And we're walking from the conference center to the restaurant, and I was standing next to a guy, and it was like, where are we going? And the guy's like, oh, we're going to Morton's. And I'm like, oh, no, really?
Steak and again?
It hit the two of us that we had hit a point where this restaurant that is supposedly like fancy and like a special occasion, that we had been to Morton's so many times because one vendor or another had taken us, that we were disappointed in Morton's. Like, that's sad.
Wow. That is sad. Right? That is sad.
So here's my idea. I want to organize a vendor dinner for Secure Ideas and take everybody to Waffle House. It'll be like 1 a.m. because you don't go to Waffle House before 1 a.m.
This sounds amazing. Yeah.
Doesn't it? Like,
I like the idea.
I think we could get a Waffle House to rent us out the entire restaurant at 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, we could get like 30, 40 people in a Waffle House. I'll cover your waffles and hash browns, smothered, covered, chunked, and diced or whatever. No, no,
oh, no. No travel.
The vendor doesn't fly you to the dinner. Oh, okay. I'm thinking we pick an event.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom, you and I are going to be at ISC Squared later this month. What's the chance there's a Waffle House walkable from?
High chance in Nashville. Very high chance.
Yeah. I think we should see if we can get a Waffle House going. And I just want to point out, I just got a private message on our team Slack from Jennifer, one of our senior consultants, and she just pointed out that you can rent a Waffle House food truck to bring you food, but I don't think that's the same.
Not the same.
Try to see if one night late, it's got to be late, that we can take a group over to Waffle House.
It'll be
the Bishop Fox Secure Ideas Waffle House hangout.
I'm totally in.
Okay.
And then we'll mail waffles to Canada.
We'll mail waffles. You know what's funny?
Scott. Yeah.
I've never had a waffle at Waffle House.
What have you had? Like an omelet?
You get the hash browns with the hash browns with the chili and the cheese and the chunked ham, and then you get two sunny side up eggs thrown on top of that, and you just cut that. Oh, it's delicious.
Okay, now I'm hungry. Thank you.
Yeah.
I know.
So before we talk more about food, and before we get into our stories this week, I did want to bring up that this is the beginning of October, so I want to do our supporter shout out. So to Johan, Dan, and Dylan, and some guy named Kevin, thank you very much for being a supporter of the podcast. We much appreciate it. And in fact, I think two of our supporters are now in our Discord server. So, apparently they weren't able to gain access before because I screwed up the permissions, because that's something that you can do on Discord. So, I have fixed that. So anybody else that would like to be a supporter, you can now successfully join our Discord server.
Let you in.
If you're, We would love to have more supporters. So if you are interested in being a supporter, you can check out sharedsecurity.net/supporter, which takes you to our Patreon, and we would greatly appreciate it. So with that, let's get into the first story of the week, which is something that I've been saving this one for Kevin specifically, because Scott, as you remember, we did talk about cars.
We mentioned
last
them, yeah.
week that we did mention that. And Mozilla, so the Mozilla Foundation, they're the makers of Firefox. They had done some pretty interesting research, actually some of the best research I have read, I think, all year,
yeah.
which is about cars and the lack, and I'd say the serious lack of privacy that's happening in the car industry right now. And it's very shocking.
I think they had actually. Three researchers for like 600 hours or something doing this.
Yes, like a ridiculous amount of hours that they spent on this research, which we will have linked in the show notes. But to kind of summarize for everybody, they reviewed 25 different car brands. And through that research, they found out that basically most, about 84%, they all share or sell your data in some way, shape, or form.
Well, and I think it's important to also say 100% of them collect way more data than they're
yes.
supposed to. Or that they
just
should.
About to say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane. And in fact, 56%, they will actually say they share your information with the government or law enforcement if there's a request, right? Okay, so that's maybe not a huge surprise. But even more shocking, 92% give drivers little or no control over their personal data.
Yeah.
So that's the other kind of shocking piece of this.
The most interesting one I saw was the Subaru one, where it said any passenger who gets in the car and rides in it agrees to the privacy policy.
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah. That's insane.
I'm a little bothered by that as somebody who gets into a lot of Lyft cars.
Well, the ramifications of this, yes. I mean, think about that. You're in a Lyft. You could potentially be recorded or...
Well, I think pictures, right? Like cameras inside the car, stuff like that are a big deal. I would rant. I think my biggest concern out of all of this is the law enforcement request.
Yeah, what's your thoughts on that? Why?
That's awful. The rest of it I don't like. Don't get me wrong, but you know that I have long decided that I have no privacy and I just assume my data is stolen. I'm not saying it's okay that I have no privacy. I'm just saying I work from the assumption that I have no privacy. But I'm significantly bothered by the idea that law enforcement can just say to Tesla, and I'm picking on Tesla because I own a Tesla, not because I don't recall seeing a list of all the car manufacturers they list. I don't know why I missed that. I know they probably said it somewhere. I'm assuming Tesla was one of the ones.
Yes, they are one of them.
At. Yeah. And I know that my Tesla has way more information on me than I probably should be comfortable with. But the idea that law enforcement could just request from Tesla my driving data.
Yes.
That bothers me. There have been many cases about this. The Supreme Court has upheld that our rights of unreasonable search and seizure aren't abdicated because a third party has that information, right? Like that the law enforcement still should be required to get a warrant. They still should be required to have more than just a, hey, could you give me that? Because the implication there is, hey, car manufacturer, could you let me know everybody who drove by this one scene at this time?
Yeah.
That's a potential request. Now, I'm not saying that they would do that. I'm not saying that has happened. I'm not saying that the car manufacturers would respond to that. But based on what Mozilla is saying, law enforcement no longer needs warrants to find out where cars are. And that bothers me, especially when you combine that with... So Denise and I both get into the car. I know for a fact my car knows that both Denise and I are in the car. The reason I know that is very often if Denise gets into the car first and then I get into the car, the driver's seat adjusts to how she wants it, not the way mm-hmm. I want it. And considering the fact that I'm 6 foot tall and she's 4 foot 11 and a half, it's not very comfortable.
Right.
True. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I know the car knows she's in the car. So now we have an issue where law enforcement just hit a Tesla. Okay, tell us who's there. And that bothers me. That yeah. is the rest of it, I think, is awful. The rest of it, the fact that we don't have very much control. I do think it's important to note, especially for somebody who has ranted very often about how useless GDPR is. I will acknowledge I am wrong in this case, because the only two manufacturers that give users the ability to delete their data only sell those cars in Europe.
Yeah.
So, and the implication there is, I'm assuming it's a fact, but the implication is that's because of GDPR. So
for sure,
it's accomplished one thing.
Yeah.
Here's a weird question. So do you think this is going to drive bigger business for jailbreaking cars? So
no.
you can control what no. they collect about you?
I don't think
you?
So.
No?
Because no. I don't think most people would want to jailbreak their car because they don't understand enough about it and it would scare them at the investment they have. Right?
Yeah, it's not easy. Like, it's not like jailbreaking your phone. And mm-hmm. even if you do jailbreak it, is that really going to stop them from collecting certain data about
Well, that the would car be the reason I would want to jailbreak it was to block some of those channels.
Possibly.
Yeah, if you could, right? I think the problem you're going to run into with this is there's very little control that we can have over this. This is where the only way something like this is going to be fixed. Cannot believe these words are about to come out of my mouth.
Here it comes.
The only way this is going to be fixed is if the government steps in and says, WTF, people.
Not the G word. Holy cow.
I know. I mean, and we know how effective government is, right? In Canada, yeah. you can't share news articles on Facebook because of the government. I don't know another way to fix this. I would like to believe the car manufacturers would give a crap, but we see in the strikes going on right now with car manufacturers that.
I think in the future, it's maybe not going to matter as much what manufacturers do as much as the services, because we're going to probably be moving away from car ownership to, you know, just having a car service that shows up to pick you up when you want to go somewhere, right?
Maybe.
And those services will probably have to have privacy policies as well. So, you know, and you're getting filmed and recorded everywhere you go. Whether you're in a car or not, really.
It's the same balancing act we've talked about for decades, right?
Yeah.
And I'll use the example that I used years ago was the mapping tool Waze. You guys remember Waze?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I still use it.
Yeah, yeah. Google bought it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I started using Waze when almost nobody used it in Jacksonville. I'm not saying like I was a trendsetter. I'm just saying I was talked to about it by people that lived elsewhere where it was very popular. And when I traveled, Waze was awesome to figure out where traffic was and right. Like regularly going somewhere when I was outside of Jacksonville, Waze was the best route. And so I started using it when I was home in Jacksonville, even though it didn't have that bad stuff. And I was giving up privacy by using it on the hope, and sure enough, it happened, that it got popular enough in the area that it became better than Google Maps. It became better than Apple Maps or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was willing to give up that privacy. There's a benefit to the number of cameras and sensors in the car I have with regards to how well it drives.
Kevin took one for the team. That's great.
But that's the question is like, are you willing to give up that privacy for a car that is safer? Are you willing to give up that privacy for a car that drives better? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah.
For me, I have given up that privacy. I don't think it's fair for me to make that decision for everybody.
I think it's very telling. The more technology, the more sensors, the more safety that is put into cars, modern cars, the more privacy I think you have to give up. I think you're completely right about that. If you don't like that, go buy a car from 2010 that doesn't have all that tech.
But,
I mean, honestly,
I, I agree with you that that's the way that you fix it, but it's not right that that is the only way to fix it.
Well, you're right. I mean,
right? Like that, that's my issue. I believe that car manufacturers should give us back control of our data. And if yes. we choose to say, hey, you know what? Because I would, if Tesla did a prompt that said, hey, Kevin, here's the stuff we're going to collect from you. Is that okay? And tell me why. And I would look at it and go, yeah, sure, whatever. Take it.
Well, right? some of those
in my car, and I've accepted it.
Some of the vehicles in that study are collecting information, and I don't know how they do this, but it apparently allows them to make inferences about your sexual habits.
So yes. the article threw that in there, and then never really clarified it. But yeah. I am guessing that they are saying that because of internal cameras, right?
Yes,
because we know what was it a month ago we talked about? No, it was longer than where. Tesla's in garages, the pictures were being shown inside of the Tesla headquarters. It was Tesla, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We were talking about that.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what I think they're saying about that. That's the same thing as this is the worst privacy thing ever. Really, I carry my phone everywhere and it has a camera and a microphone and every bit of my life on it. So cool. I think that's what they meant about sex life.
Yeah. So just to kind of in this segment here, there's not a whole lot that you can do, but there are some good tips I thought that they added in here that where possible, you know, try to opt out of any third party advertising, depending on the car manufacturer. This is obviously going to vary greatly, but you should at least try to opt out of any third party data sharing. Always uncheck the box for personalized ads, unless you're Kevin, of course, who likes personal ads. But again, that's your choice, right?
I choose, yes.
And then the bigger advice that we've always told people, and I think is great that they reference this, is that, hey, if you're reselling your car or selling your car, delete all of your data on the car, like your cell phone records, like
reset.
The Bluetooth connection, factory reset everything. I'm surprised every single used car that I've bought recently, and I have bought several because I won't go into it, but let's just say a child of mine has crashed their car more than once. So I've had to buy additional cars, and every car that I've bought, none of that data was erased. The car dealer's not going to do it because they're not very tech savvy and the owners aren't doing it.
That's so a story for another
please,
episode.
Please, please erase your data before you sell your car. That's right. So with that, Scott, let us jump into our favorite segment, which is Aware Much.
It's good to have Kevin back. Yes, Tom.
Sadly, I needed the laugh. I needed his laugh. Yes.
We really missed you last week, Kevin.
Sorry, man. I apologize.
We had no laugh. It was just kind of dull.
It was just dead air.
I'll mute myself because I know.
Dead air. So sadly, we seem to need this segment on an ongoing basis to help people understand how to protect themselves. And passwords are still one of the biggest challenges. People reuse them. They use the ones that are easy to guess. But what can we learn from sites that tell you what their password rules are? Interestingly, in a Reddit thread that we found, we saw a post that said somebody's bank had the following password rules: 8 to 20 characters in length, at least one number, at least one letter, no caps, no special characters. Great for usability, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not for security. But the first thing we can learn is probably this bank is not very good at security. And maybe I wouldn't want to keep my money there. But, you know, the one thing that is stated is, you know, a maximum length for passwords. You know, and Kevin and I had a little discussion about this yesterday on another topic. But if you're not mentioning a limit, then it's probably better, because if you see a limit on a password, number of passwords you can enter, then it might suggest that the organization is doing something with those passwords that they shouldn't, like storing them and things like that. So it's interesting to sort of see these rules. And I know that we have a link to some guidelines from NIST in the show notes. And there's some, you know, good ones in there. And on the service side or the code side, I think it says, make sure that you can allow at least 64 characters, you know, for user input for a password. What's interesting, I also learned yesterday, was that YubiKeys, which are, you know, popular way of having long and strong passwords, They're 38 characters. So going beyond that, is that necessary? Don't know. If they're random enough, but maybe if you're using a passphrase, it needs to be longer. So anyway, that's what we learned from this bank and the NIST guidelines will be interesting to see. I'm not sure I totally get all of the NIST guidelines. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on things like they're saying not to use SMS.
Right. Yeah, I think the only one we mentioned is like the password expiration, which was good. Like that should go away, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Which I think a lot of organizations have started doing that. But what I found interesting about that Reddit thread in particular was that, you know, they're focused on how difficult it was for users to create passwords based on all these variations of password policies. And so it got me thinking, like you had mentioned, Scott, like what is kind of the best practice for, you know, creating passwords? And I think the answer is it varies. But as a user, like that's why I'm a big proponent of like password managers, like let the app do the work for you. Mm-hmm. Instead of you trying to figure out, oh, look, another site. And how am I going to figure out a password for this? And it just sucks. But that's just where we're at.
I think it boils down to a very simple idea. And Tom, you absolutely outlined this. The harder you make it for the users, the worse for security it is.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It's that simple. We know that if you make it difficult, users will bypass you. And they're either going to bypass you by not using your system, or they're going to bypass you by just giving up and doing something as simple as anything.
Yep.
Now, having said that, I've got to ask how any bank has a password requirement that says no capital letters and that passed the government audits. What podunk bank are you? And like, come on.
Well, no, I mean, I used to work for a bank, and I can tell you that the reason why they had weird password restrictions, because all the passwords were stored on the mainframe, and the mainframe had password restrictions of what you could store in a database. So a lot of people don't realize that that's why, especially in banking, they're still using old mainframe technology that does have restrictions and limits. But anyway,
and that stores passwords instead of hashes.
Well, that is, I'm sure, changed by now.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
But, yeah.
Anyways, so this segment was brought to you by ClickArmor. If you're a security awareness manager, you should join us for our bi-weekly cybersecurity awareness forums. Every second Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, we have a group of security professionals who are passionate about security awareness, and we have really good discussions. Everybody chips in. We have a live audience Q&A and some really interesting panelists. And the next one coming up October 18th, if you hear this before that date, and we'll have recordings of it, is on the psychology of security awareness and phishing simulations.
I'll tell you that so the panelists he brings
PhDs
on are awesome.
In cybersecurity psychology, so that'll be a fun one. So looking forward to seeing everybody there. You can go to clickarmor.ca/CSAF to register for any of these sessions, and you'll get notifications and reminders.
Well, Scott is completely frozen, but thank you for the segment of Aware Much.
You know what you need to do? Just record me laughing at that. And then when I'm not here, play it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I find it so funny, but I do.
Yes.
So our last segment, right?
Yes, our last segment, because Scott is
Scott's gone.
Is gone. He's gone. Yeah. Well, yeah, his internet probably died a horrible
Jesus.
Death.
Jesus.
Don't worry about it, man. Okay. I said good things about your panelists.
Yeah, we totally made it. We did the rest for you, Scott.
Sorry, you know what? I do have a brand new Mac, which Kevin didn't know, but it's all working great, except I have two Wi-Fi networks, and I forgot to switch to the one that's closest, and it was going through Wi-Fi network that's two floors away.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problem.
So, our last story of the week, Sony has confirmed yet another data breach, which I think this is like, what, the second or third this year alone?
I think it's the second one they've confirmed this year. I don't think the first one should count.
The first one this year?
Yeah. I don't think... I don't think we should hold companies who are running MoveIt. I don't think we should say, you got hacked because you're running MoveIt, unless you're still running MoveIt. And right, but yes, Sony got hacked through the MoveIt vulnerability, but that one was so widespread and so quick. You know what I mean? Like that was a bad situation all around. And in my opinion, that was MoveIt's issue, not Sony's.
Yeah.
Now the second one, and don't get me wrong, they got Sony data. Like I know that, right? Like I get that. But the second one sounds more like a Sony problem.
Yeah, I mean, this is. I have an interesting link I tweeted this morning going back to the 2014 Sony breach. Do you remember that, Kevin and Scott? The big one that North Korea actually hacked Sony because of that movie that they made making fun of North Korea. And that was a devastating one for Sony. And it was all in pictures from the movies that they made. It's very entertaining. But yeah, we'll have links to all that. But I just brought this up as something to talk about because Sony again, really? Like it's like T-Mobile again. I mean, two companies, Sony and T-Mobile, seem to have like the majority of data breaches in recent history. So it's just kind of disturbing.
Well, I don't own a PlayStation anymore, so
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I think that's all we have time for this week. But thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate you both. And we're getting close to episode 300. We've got a couple special things planned for episode 300. So we'll have some announcements about that soon. But thanks, everyone. And we will speak again next week. Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.